Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Potential trends in the 2025 ag economy, per USDA's chief economist, Seth Meyer.
Last year, I was very concerned about the pace in which commodity prices have been falling. This year, I think, is a bit different. Have we slowed that decline? Still not good margins, but I think the momentum is a bit more, maybe perhaps if prices are declining, that the decline is slowing at the moment.
Year-over-year decreases in commodity prices and cash receipts are expected for most major row crops. On the other hand,
livestock receipts across categories having trended up over the last few years in cattle. Prospects for dairy flat, but above maybe where they've been.
And increased year-over-year prices for livestock and poultry. As for inputs,
input prices mixed. The last couple years of output prices, they're all lower. That margin squeeze continues to occur.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
At USDA's annual Ag Outlook Forum, the outlook for livestock and poultry, Michael McConnell, livestock analyst, said total red meat and poultry production last year increased nearly 1%, 107.6 billion pounds, resuming growth after a total production decline in 2023. Now, the increase due to higher pork and broiler production as well as flat beef production. And they more than offset the declines in turkey. Now for 2025, total red meat and poultry production expected to increase again by 1% to 108.4 million pounds. Lower beef and turkey production expected to be more than offset by pork and broiler sectors. Tighter supplies of cattle and resilient demand for beef expected to support fed steer prices. Hog prices expected to increase as well, as strong domestic and export demand expected to carry over from 2024. Broiler prices forecast to increase as tighter supplies of beef are expected to support domestic chicken demand. And turkey prices forecast to rebound for the first time after 2 years of price declines that have resulted in reduced production in 2024. Now, the planted acreage outlook from USDA has initial expectations for 2025 planted area, an increase in planted area of corn, wheat, and soybeans relative to the previous year. Combined acreage for the three crops projected at 225 million acres. It's an increase of under 1%, relatively more unfavorable price prospects for corn, and a reported increase in winter wheat seedings. Now, the increase in the combined area for the three crops expected to be moderated by a normal level of prevent plant and expansion in conservation reserve or CRP acres. Season average farm prices received by producers for corn, soybeans, and wheat all forecast to decline modestly. So what's the breakdown? Well, according to USDA's first estimate, 94 million acres of corn, up from 90.6 last year. For soybeans, 84 million, down from 87.1, and wheat at 47 million, up from 46.1. But what about cotton? Well, in its first forecast, USDA projecting global cotton stocks will fall 2.3 million bales, remaining at a level that will continue to pressure world cotton prices. However, low prices, solid economic growth, providing a boost to global cotton consumption. It's expected to increase to 119 million bales, about 3% higher than last year. China will account for about half of the expected growth, but even with the growth, cotton demand still below levels achieved almost 20 years ago, as multiple economic disruptions have eroded the cotton's market position. World cotton production projected to fall over 3% as the average price is expected to decline again. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My wife and I got married in 1972. I was born and raised on a small farm, and I was wanting to get back in the cattle business. We had moved into town, and so Sandy and I moved our two daughters to Canyon, Texas, and got into the commercial cattle feeding deal down there.
Buck Warbine is a cattle feeder from Nebraska and current president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
At Randall County Feed Yard outside of Amarillo, 65,000 head feedlot back then. And I didn't go to college, but I got a master's at Randall County. And so grew up in the business there and got involved with Texas cattle feeders, which set me on a path of volunteer work with associations that I've continued on until here I am.
One change that's happened over the last 20 years, beef on dairy. How important has it been?
Dairy is bovine also. And so the beef on dairy, the advent of that has been very interesting. And we feed some of them in Nebraska also. And watching them perform through the packing house and through processing, they're an interesting animal, and it's changed our business some. It's changed our numbers some. It's helped us at a time when our herd is down, which is fun, you know, if you're selling cattle, because it brings a high price. But we also need enough meat to where we don't lose market share to the other proteins. And so it's been good for us in that way. And the high quality beef is an interesting thing. I don't think we're done growing that segment of the business. But of course, there's 9 million dairy cows, so there's a limit to how many can contribute. But that's been an interesting turn of events at a time when we kind of needed those cattle because of our short numbers.
How about recent CattleCon 25?
We've had conventions when the market was good before, and people are happy and smiling and having a good time. This year was different. Maybe that's me and not all the people, but it is the term I used was buoyant. The attitude just seemed so upbeat and positive. I think it was probably a combination of good cattle market and making money and all those things that contribute to happiness in our business, but also perhaps the turn of the election, and that I think brought a lot of hope to a lot of us for the future after what we've been through in our mind, at least for the last 4 years.
And a recent opportunity to testify before a Senate committee.
Well, that was my first offense at it, so it was an interesting experience. As I was giving my opening remarks, testimony, and then answering questions, I'll tell you that I was struck by the feeling of privilege to be able to do this and to be able to participate in a small part of the greatest form of government ever in the history of the world. And so that was a really great feeling that I did not expect, and appreciated the opportunity to do it. And that Ag Committee, the Senate Ag Committee, looks to me like a pretty solid group. And I think they've got the right idea. I understand that this was simply a hearing, but it was also interesting that quite a few of the other groups, you know, the poultry people and whatnot with Hypath, you know, they're in a different situation. The cattle business is strong, and to be able to share that and have a little bit different perspective than the rest of the groups was fun. Not that you wish bad on anybody, but it's fun when things are going well for you and you're able to share that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I actually made a board for what the gentleman's point was, showing that within this budget this reconciliation budget document, how much additional tax cuts are there for C corporations? There's your board. Being a little sarcastic, but that's sort of a personality trait. The fact of the matter is, once again, the talking points don't match up with the reality here.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert on the floor of the House last week.
Your taxes, everyone in this room, your taxes go up at the end of this year. If you run a small business, a pass-through, not a C corporation, a pass-through, your taxes go up. If you're part of an employee-owned company, so you've come together and you're managing yourselves almost like an employee co-op, your taxes go up. Now, what also do I hope? But I don't know if the capacity that this creates will allow us to do it, but I sure hope so. We have some great data, and I won't make you live through my charts, that show expensing. Research and development expensing and expensing. It has a cost in the 10-year window. Okay, hopefully everyone has listened to my dozens and dozens and dozens of speeches walking through what expensing is. Expensing is nothing more than depreciation. Do you take it in 1 year or, let's pretend, 7 years? But you still get the exact same amount of reduction in your taxes. It's a timing effect. The difference is if you can take it in the first year, if you do it over 7, you have to finance it. We actually have great economic modeling that shows when you do expense research and development, when you do expensing, you actually get a virtuous cycle of, well, we bought the piece of equipment, so we do it better, faster, cheaper. Well, our competitors just did it. The next year, we got to do it again. And that was one of the reasons, particularly pre-pandemic, we had that sudden spike of capital expenditures in productivity. The punchline on that is that actually does not exist now. It's our fading out for those C corporations, which actually have their rates already locked in, but also for all those other small businesses to make those capital expenditures. Why is this really important? Well, there's lots of data that shows that part of the tax code actually does, from an economic growth standpoint, create incredible vitality. And it's a timing effect. It's the tyranny of living within a 10-year window in our models. I just hope that actually starts to actually elevate a little bit of the economics discussion instead of the storytelling.
If the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is not extended, Schweikert says two-thirds of Americans pay more.
The average family, your taxes are going up at the end of this year, $2,853, and 62% of taxpayers, 62% of taxpayers will see hikes. And I'm sorry, we just didn't have time to make a much prettier chart for everyone. Remember, after 2017, we actually moved up, but some of that was the some of the deductions and things were added. We moved up the threshold, so almost the half of our taxpaying population actually didn't pay income taxes. They still had payroll taxes and FICA and those things. A bunch of that population that has not paid taxes in years and years and years will be getting tax bills with the opposition to this.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Little Bear Produce is a family-owned grower, packer, shipper, and fresh-cut processor headquartered in Edinburg, Texas.
Testifying before a Senate Ag Committee, Brett Erickson, an Edinburg, Texas vegetable grower.
Jimmy and Diane Bassetti came to Texas from Vineland, New Jersey in 1984 and started a small mom-and-pop brokerage, which has grown into a multinational agribusiness employing nearly 200 full-time employees with comprehensive benefits, including health and life insurance and 401ks. We also hire an additional 500 to 600 seasonal workers, primarily through H2A, to harvest and pack our products. Labor costs remain the biggest threat to the future of the U.S. fresh produce growers. In Texas, our labor costs have essentially doubled in just 5 years. We're currently at $23 an hour for our cost. The federally mandated adverse effect wage rate inflates labor costs beyond market realities, making it difficult to compete with foreign producers. We urge USDA to revise the farm labor survey to reflect base wages only. Additionally, we would request USDA to appoint an ag liaison to the Department of Labor to help guide policy that impacts food and farm production.
He told lawmakers about water issues with Mexico.
Texas farmers are facing severe water shortages, in part due to Mexico's failure to meet its obligation under the 1944 Water Treaty. Mexico is required to deliver 200,000 acre-feet of water per year. They are now in debt 1.3 million acre-feet, which is over 6 years behind schedule. While other regions pray for recovery from hurricane disasters, we are literally praying for hurricanes to refill our reservoirs. Less than 10 years ago, we were paying about $30 per acre foot of water. Today, it's as high as $225 per acre foot and climbing. That's if we can find it. Meanwhile, Mexico is withholding six years' worth of water and using it to grow competing crops like onions and pecans.
Erickson was testifying on the status of the ag economy, but also took time to talk about crop protection tools and general regulation.
On crop protection and regulatory challenges, fresh produce growers are rapidly losing access to essential pest management tools. As key pesticides and herbicides are phased out, there are few viable alternatives and even fewer in the EPA's approval pipeline. A recent example is Doctol, an herbicide we relied on for onion production. After 50 years of safe use, the EPA abruptly canceled it last year with no comparable replacement. EPA has yet to provide guidance on viable alternatives. This creates instability for growers, which in turn creates opportunity for foreign producers. We urge Congress to restrain regulatory overreach and bureaucratic red tape.
On the topic of fair trade?
On trade and economic competitiveness, fair trade is critical for fresh produce growers. A recent Texas A&M study highlighted USDA ERS data showing an eye-popping decline in the U.S. fresh produce trade balance. You all should have that chart in your papers. It began in the early 90s and it has accelerated through the 2022. Like many in our industry, our company imports from Mexico to supplement our U.S. production in order to provide our customers a consistent year-round supply, but only when we are out of season. At the end of the day, pricing is king. But how can a U.S. grower compete on cilantro, onions, parsley, or watermelons when my labor cost is $23 per man hour and a foreign producer pays their worker $18 per day and operates under less regulation? That is not a fair playing field. On the flip side, we sell a lot of product to our Canadian friends. They are incredible customers who value good quality. They love fresh produce. They also buy Canadian grown whenever available. They will not bring in our product when they're in season. I admire that and believe you could learn a lesson from our friends to the north. Protect your growers. They keep you fed.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Those of us that are old enough to remember, in the 80s, our demand for our product was simply precipitously falling.
Buck Warbine is a Nebraska cattle feeder, president, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
I remember asking my dad back then, what did we do to make everybody hate us? Red meat bad, fat bad. And so some forward-thinking cattle people got together and took a hard look at our business and saw that we needed to respond to what our consumers wanted and so forth. And so they came up with the first long-range plan that every 5 years is updated. We're in the process of doing it this year again. And that will be the guideline and guideposts for how the checkoff administers that money, those investments. And then we'll also come up with a strategic plan that will guide the policy staff and what they do. And so through the checkoff, as part of that, we petitioned the government to come up with a checkoff. They wrote the act and the order. Then we had a referendum and approved it by like 79%, as I recall back then. And since then, that has continued to be popular like that in similar numbers. The naysayers that you've mentioned tried to get a referendum to get rid of it, a couple of years ago. And couldn't even get the 10% threshold that they needed to just have the referendum, which to my cowboy logic said that that's a referendum of itself. And so it's still highly popular. And what it has done, along with other things that the industry did, including genetics and things like that, our demand curve just changed dramatically. And we have demand like I never would have dreamed we could have. And not only domestic, but also export demand too. And exports are important because they add somewhere north of $400 per head to all the producers.
Though times have been good, he says, we haven't started rebuilding.
What I understand is we have not actually stopped liquidation, let alone rebuilding the herd. But we will, and we'll get the numbers up again. And this market will not stay this high forever. But when you're riding a fast horse, it's fun to go fast. And so I'm happy that our actual producers out there, the factory, you might say, that makes the calves that we all use, it should be getting healed up here.
And he talks about tax reform.
Well, in President Trump's first term, they passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was a signature event for him. And now that will go away the end of this year, the end of 2025. So it's imperative that gets reauthorized. And he's talking about that, which, of course, he would want to to get that reauthorized, having been something that he accomplished in his first term. But even is talking about improving it. And with the appreciation of land, to have a death in the family and need to transfer that property over to your heirs, the taxes that could be owed on that is astounding. And so that's important that that gets reauthorized and even improved. And of course, the limit on the death tax was raised remarkably. But like I said, with the value of land now in a high volume, low margin business, that's important that that even gets raised. And so, and things like, you know, getting the weeds with the stepped up basis and so forth. So those things need to get reauthorized. And I believe Congress and certainly the administration knows that. So we'll be working strenuously with them to get that done.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Madam Chairwoman, how would you feel if I could document to you that the post-2017 tax reform was more progressive?
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
Now, there were lower rates, but the top portion of income earners actually were paying a higher percentage of federal income tax. So when you actually start looking at this, remember, and this is the distributional problem that I was going to try to walk through. I believe when you do the math here, 5% of the population, now these are people making stunning amounts of money. And if we want to have a discussion, should they pay more? Guess what? This opens up that discussion because there are no rates locked into this. It just creates the capacity to now have the discussion. But the fact of the matter, the top 5% pay 38% of all federal income taxes. Half the workers in the United States pay less than 1%. And what is it, the bottom, and I'll take a correction if someone actually knows the actual number, I think the bottom 25% actually receives more because substantially earned income tax credit, which is the old negative income tax model. Look, we have a distributional problem. If you want to have a discussion of wealth and income equality, I have some great charts to show you of what inflation did, what the previous punctuating 3.5 years of inflation did to wealth in the working class. When you inflate up people who have assets and you crush those who are trying to survive, congratulations.
Says it's not a giveaway, it's an opportunity.
Madam Chair, once again, here's the budget document. Here's the spreadsheets. I keep hearing you're giving away to billionaires. Where's that? Where is it? Madam Chair, it doesn't exist because this is a box. This is a box that allows us, and understand, I am passionately concerned about debt and deficits. But this may be, for an idiot like myself, the first opportunity where members of leadership and those are ready to allow people like me to come in and walk through how we can improve, change the costs of how we deliver services. And we need this type of document to do it. And you deal with the reality of what we're allowed to touch. You do realize the majority of mandatory spending, we're not even allowed to touch in a budget reconciliation because it's interest in Medicare is the majority. And every day we wait to modernize, we're in that much more trouble. Last thing before I do a yield here. We're going to spend $86 trillion, and I'm partially doing this off the top of my head, over the next decade. This budget reconciliation, we're hoping to get, let's say we're blessed, we get $2 trillion offsets, so that creates a couple trillion in additional borrowing. You're talking a fraction, a couple percent of the spending. I would argue this is the moment for us where it's not about cuts. If any of you have ever just even bothered to look at the MedPAC reports and those, and this was done by the Biden administration, we have potentially over a decade, hundreds of billions in here that aren't going to services, aren't going to make our brothers and sisters healthier. Help us engage the morality of doing this better, faster, and cheaper.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The ag export-import gap is expected to remain wide in 2025, per USDA in its first agricultural trade forecast for the year. A $500 million increase in exports is forecasted, due mostly to higher grain and feed exports. Mexico is poised to buy a record over $30 billion in U.S. farm and food goods this year. Yet China is expected to import less U.S. grain, soybeans, and cotton, reducing their ag export forecast with our country by $1.3 billion in 2025. As USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer explained Thursday at the Ag Outlook Forum,
China is one of our bulk commodity buyers. Our bulk commodities are doing better when China is buying. When China demand slows, our bulk commodity trade will slow as well, too, and provide us some challenges on our export side.
Strong consumer demand for horticultural and tropical products raised import forecasts by $4 billion for this year, leading to a projected almost $50 billion trade imbalance. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.